Chapter 19. The Style Street Slaying. There were 24 cadavers laid out on trolleys under formalin-soaked sheets in the dissection room of the anatomy building opposite number 125 Gower Street. But all the living occupants were congregated at the far end of the room when we entered. Professor Duffy was bent, a hooked Pirogov retractor in hand, over a long marble-topped table behind a tin bathtub, and half a dozen students, their long laboratory coats encrusted in dried body fluids, stood round the table, sorting through a selection of human fingers in two kidney dishes. He glanced up. "Mr. Grice and Miss—" His voice and interest in me trailed away. "Meet my human jigsaw puzzle." There was a man's head on the slab, badly gouged, as were his limbs. The rest of him was still in the tub, a mess of torn, bloodied flesh, with projecting bones still waiting to be reassembled.
"Style Street?"
Sidney Grice picked up a thumb with some tweezers. He put it under his nose, and for a horrible moment, I thought he was going to pop it in his mouth, but he sniffed appreciatively and put it back in the bowl. "What happened to him?" I asked, hoping I did not look as queasy as I felt in the midst of such masculine company.
"He was passed through a rag shredder."
"Was he still conscious?"
"Not when he came out of the other end."
A tousle-haired, pimply student guffawed, and his companions chortled, partly at his joke, but mainly at me.
"It is impossible to tell," the learned professor explained, for the benefit of the simple girl who had asked the question. "Have you considered the possibility that Miss Middleton was merely curious as to whether you had calculated the answer for yourselves?"
my guardian inquired with touching, though unjustified, loyalty. Professor Duffy unsuccessfully suppressed a snigger.
"Indeed. Perhaps you would like to explain your methods for the benefit of these gentlemen,"
Mr. G invited me, mouthing the last word like a bad taste. "No, I damned well would not," I thought, but I forced what I hoped was a confident smile and murmured, "Surely they have already worked it out for themselves."
"Not yet,"
a reedy, red-eyed youth sneered. "Well, the patterns of bleeding—" I floundered and felt my godfather's cane press into my boot. "Are irrelevant," I added hastily. The students folded their arms to watch me make a fool of myself, and I obligingly walked slowly round the table whilst I played for time. Sidney Grice wandered away behind the group, leaving me alone.
"I fear your master overestimated your powers,"
Duffy smiled patronizingly as Mr. G popped up behind him, miming an orchestral conductor. Rather unhelpfully, I thought.
"I have no master," I retorted.
Mr. G rolled his eye and repeated the manoeuvre, nodding and shaking his head, arms waving and twirling, and then I realized he was tying an imaginary rope.
"He was dead, or at the very least unconscious," I declared.
The professor eyed me suspiciously.
"Explain," he commanded, as if I had joined his unsavory band.
My mind raced. "The arms and legs are severely lacerated, but there is enough skin visible to be confident that there are no rope marks, and you could not make a conscious man lie still on the conveyor belt to be fed into a shredder without tying him up."
"Hmm."
The professor considered my proposal dubiously, and my guardian, still behind him, threw back his head in despair and tried again, this time very slowly. He held out his right hand like a claw, and drew it down in a wavy motion, shaking his head. He repeated the process in a straight downward line, nodding vigorously. And then it clicked.
"Let me make it simpler," I continued, to my guardian's approval. "These striated wounds, caused by the shredding teeth, run in straight parallel lines. No matter how well you restrained your victim, you could not stop a sentient man from writhing in his agonies."
And from the back of the room, Sidney Grice applauded silently.
"I was going to let my fledgling colleagues work that out,"
Duffy declared unconvincingly.
What is the purpose of your visit, Mr. Grice?
Mr. Jonathan, alias the Walrus, Wallace,
my godfather announced.
Oh, yes. The professor indicated a covered mound to his left. I haven't had a chance to look at him yet. I had forgotten he was one of yours.
I do not, and never have possessed, Mr. Wallace, nor have I constructed a scheme to do so,
Mr. G. assured him. And we went over and, walking down each side, peeled the saturated sheet back. Johnny looked smaller than when I had last seen him. It was not just that he was lying down or that he was naked, but there is something about death that diminishes a person, as if the flight of the soul physically shrinks a body. Sidney Grice huffed noisily.
Some cack-handed fool has already interfered with him, he snarled,
and I looked to see that the dome of the skull had been sawn clumsily so that the neat bullet wound was now a jagged hole, some 4 or 5 inches in diameter.
And from the determinedly innocent look on that pallid Habsburgian boy's face, it is clearly his doing.
Everybody looked at the pale student, who had a projecting lower jaw, though I thought it unkind of my guardian to remark upon it.
I would advise any gamblers amongst you to wager that it was he.
The pale youth paled further. I was just looking for the bullet. Sidney Grice held out his hand, and the student reluctantly reached into his laboratory coat and surrendered a grey lump.
I wanted it as a souvenir, he mumbled.
Mr. G. turned the bullet over, a shapeless, squashed lump of lead now.
With what did you remove it? He demanded. The truth, boy.
The pale student paled some more.
My fingers, sir. It seemed easier than poking blindly with forceps.
You are sure?
Yes, sir.
No metallic instruments at all?
No, sir.
Good boy.
Mr. G. snapped his fingers, and a sixpenny piece appeared between them.
Here.
He spun it high in the air.
Use that to induce a barber to relocate the untethered ends of your oleaginous hairs closer to your scalp. I do not know why you are interested in Wallace.
Duffy was clearly discomfited at he and his students being belittled.
You already know how he died.
Who, Professor?
My godfather went down on his haunches to scrutinize a tattered lung that had been deposited in an enameled bowl on the floor.
One of the few things we have in common.
He parted two spongy lobes with a steel spatula. Is that our interest in people is only increased by their demises. Mr. G. poked the instrument into the opening of a large bronchus and scooped around it.
The man who once possessed this cadaver came recently from a rural area. He had a chronic inflammatory pulmonary condition which I have oft observed afflicts those who deal with hay.
We called it farmer's chest in Lancashire, I recalled.
I suspect it is a reaction to the dust created in the production of fodder. His lungs are choked with it.
Sidney Grice held out the spatula coated in phlegm, speckled with off-yellow particles. An alternative to his theory sprang to mind, but I refrained from voicing it amongst such would-be superior beings. Professor Duffy had no such qualms, however.
Tens of thousands of people in London deal with hay every day, he objected. Ostlers, carters, stable lads and grooms, for example.
And inhale the soot-laden air with every breath,
my guardian reminded him.
You have performed enough autopsies to have observed that their alveoli are clogged with carboniferous deposits. Scalpel, Miss Middleton.
I passed one handle first, as often I had placed one into my father's hand before the world made me old whilst I was still young. And Mr. G. sliced deep into the tissue. Quite pink, I vouched, so probably not a smoker either.
Come, Miss Middleton.
Sidney Grice rose and made for the exit.
Oh, and that right middle finger does not belong to the same man. It is too short and smells of tobacco tar.
Anything else? Professor Duffy asked tersely.
I think that will do for today,
my guardian assured him, lifting the corner of a sheet idly to inspect a partly dissected foot.
Perhaps you would care to give our man a name, the professor suggested sarcastically.
Simon, I said, and he gaped at me. It is a nice name, I continued, but not necessarily his.
Goodbye, Professor. Sidney Grice tipped his hat as he ushered me out. I cannot agree.
His lips were as immobile as a very good ventriloquist's.
With your inflated puffery for that appellation, it tastes of pork. Acquellan is a far superior name. It is Anglo-Saxon and means.
We passed back out onto Gower Street.
Kill.